the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. My name is Joey. That is Len, coming to you from our respective basements, like always. Like Wayne's World, eh, Len? All good things start in the basement, I would say. What's going on over there?
And stay in the basement, too, because I haven't moved out of the basement. I'm good, man. It stormed over here, and it's the first time we got rain in quite some time. Everywhere else but over here, it's been raining. And the grass needs it, but the plants need it, and so forth. Everything is good, though. Just, man, oh, man, busy fiat mining, and I'm looking forward to calling an end to that one day, but I'm still many, many years away from that. How are you, Joey?
I'm good, man. Busy day today. Great weekend with some great friends. Got another great weekend coming up here. And I got to say, Len, I'm a little, I had like a melancholy moment today. The summer's already half over, right? If we think about the kids going back to school in September, we're getting pretty close here, right? We're like, a month away-ish, something like that. What's today, the 25th, 24th, month and change?
We have still over here another 3 good months of weather, I would say that. And we've played golf up until December.
Wait a minute. What the front door? 3 months? What are you talking about? You're gonna have August, September max, and then you think October's a good month too.
Yeah.
What's the standard for good month? Am I missing something here?
As long as you can still ride a motorcycle, it's okay. The leaves start to fall around September. Then once it gets wet and the leaves are underground, it's a tough ride. You got to be very careful. But you can still ride in October. In fact, I've even ridden in November. So I've played golf in December. So you get the odd day that's decent, but whatever. One day, Joey, we'll change this. Instead of being a Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, we'll be the El Salvador Bitcoiners podcast. And we'll be able to have good weather year-round. What's going on over there? It's a turnaround, and it's a good place for people to go, and it's getting to be safer. And a lot of people, businesses are moving in. It's
a lot of attacks on that guy last week or so, eh? Like more than normal, it seems like. A few prominent mags going after him. Anyway, we'll talk about that, I'm sure. Let's talk about our sponsors. EasyDNS, okay? Mark's been on the show a few times. Actually, when we had a what should I call last Wednesday? A scheduling incident? That's a kind way to put it.
No, it's not a scheduling incident. I would say it's a stiffing. I'm going to go as far as to say that.
Like, I wasn't going to say it, but I'm glad you said it.
It was booked. We had it booked. It was going to be sealed and delivered, but unfortunately,
we'll talk about it in the after show. I'd be happy to talk about it in the after show and let people know what happened. I think we're big enough now that it doesn't matter. So we can tell these guys to, get lost. Anyway,
there's a lot of people that are on that list, by the way.
I know.
A lot more than you are aware.
Listen, I think we hold grudges too from the early days.
I like a memory like an elephant, man. I never forget this shit. You screw us once, it's over. We'll
talk about that in the after show. But anyway, EasyDNS is a great sponsor. Great service, Mark and team over there. Listen, someone was giving us a hard time in the chat today, I think, about our website not being done. Was it Jordab, maybe? I got news for you, okay? You guys don't even know the website link. You don't know how much the website has on it. You think you do. You think you know what the website's called. But you may not actually know what's there. So we're working on that with Mark, and his team is helping us with that, which is fantastic. They're a great place to do all your domain hosting. Obviously, EasyDNS is what they do, is domains, but also virtual private servers. So if you're running a Nostr relay, more important than ever as X starts to roll out, if you're running a BTC pay server, if you're running any of these things, right, go over there, head over, talk to Mark and the guys, tell them CBP sent you, use CBP Media, the promo code. And what do you get? Is he still giving people 50% off? I know a bunch of you guys have used that code. Is it 50% off? That's nuts, man. I would never give anyone 50% off of anything, personally. So it's a good thing he's a sponsor and not me.
Well, we're giving away something more than that. But before we get to that point, we'll talk about the other sponsor, which is Bull Bitcoin, who happened to also give some sats to this giveaway that we're doing today. But that's a topic we'll talk about a little bit later on. So Bull Bitcoin is a great place to buy. And you can sell your Bitcoin. Don't do that. It doesn't make sense to, but whatever. The option is available for you to do so. You can also buy Liquid on there in case that's your jam, and also Lightning. With Bull Bitcoin, you can live on a Bitcoin standard, because you can just live with Bitcoin. You can pay your bills through pull Bitcoin, you could buy gift cards and then go ahead and spend it on, in the real world. So with Bitcoin, you could live and breathe it thanks to bull Bitcoin. Also, you could get KYC free Bitcoin, and it's a, just an easy way to do it with over 6,000 locations in Canada to exchange your dirty fiat for KYC free Bitcoin. My gosh, like it's a no-brainer. And use our promo code below if you haven't already done so. By doing so and funding your account, you're going to get $21 added to your account, Canadian.
Yeah, you got to verify with your phone number because everyone's been taking that $21. Okay, so before we start, Owen in the chat, the Joey guy's got my shirt on. We're going to send you the shirts. Actually, Len, I did an estimate for shipping. I hope this doesn't change people's mind. To ship to our friend Jaime, who's in, I want to say Saskatchewan, right?
Somewhere in that neck of the woods.
It's about $20 to ship that far.
Wow.
With Canada Post. So that means that the cost for the shirts is whatever. It's, what is it, 25 Bitcoin, 30 CAD? Is that what
Yeah.
So you got to think it might be a little more shipping than maybe you thought. It's definitely more than I thought. I don't get a lot of stuff shipped, but maybe I'm in the minority. So think about that. I know a bunch of you guys have submitted. If you change your mind, there's no hard feelings. It's fine. You know, we'll see you guys at a meetup or something and we can do a switch out there for the shirts or whatever. But yeah, I was a little disappointed to see that. And FedEx and the other guys, not much cheaper unless you're really doing volume. It's tough to get that stuff out. And Canada Post now, Len, they won't let you like fold a shirt a million times and like stick it in basically like a letter mail envelope. They want you to use like one of their bubble mailers to send everything that's not a paper. It's a racket over there.
You know what? I'm shocked. Given all the business we're sending them for the fact that the people are buying KYC free Bitcoin through Canada Post, they should be giving us a discount for mailing shit out. So we should be talking to somebody over there. If anybody knows who's the head honcho at Canada Post, give us that person's name because we'll send them an email. Maybe invite them on a show and we could do like a home and home. Would they give us a deal? Yeah, let's do that. But Joey, a couple of things I want to talk about first off. Sure. We had some boosts.
Okay.
And I'm going to rhyme off the top five boosts that came in. And for those who aren't aware, these are the sats that people stream into us and send to us when they're listening to Fountain. Check it out. Fountain, you can just use that and get some Bitcoin added to your account just by simply listening to podcasts. But MoBTC Dick, 550 sats. I feel a lot of empathize with Joseph. This is with Joseph Barbuto, I think.
Yeah.
Diehard socialist when we were young, and we realize how dangerous it is as we age. Great rip, Joey. Invaluable knowledge here.
He was a lot of fun, that guy. And he had a lot of good things to say about our show and about what we were doing after the program as well. He offered to come back anytime we want to have him on. So I look forward to talking to Joe again.
Okay. Halo22B. I don't know who this guy is, but anyways, a boost of fresh air. Not hearing about Joey's Achilles. Laugh out loud, great show. We haven't heard from him for a while. What happened to him? I guess he healed up and he went away.
I don't know. He's fine.
he's good to go. Anyways, Rander, 606 sats. I love when you guys go off the rails. Laugh out loud. It's very entertaining. And I think you should do more short ranting ones like this.
The Clown World North Wednesday surprise episode? Is that what the... I enjoyed that. I think the only reason we didn't do that before is because you had Wayfaring on Monday and he's a yank, right? So it's a hard thing to do, Clown World North. I'm sure we'll touch it tonight. But yeah, maybe in future. I don't know. There's always opportunities for more content. The more you guys listen, the closer I get to doing this full time. So yeah, if you want more content, you listen and share it. And as the numbers go up, I'm happy to do more.
Well, North Star Chris, 1,000 sats. To all the no-show guests, may a plague of syphilis befall on the animals that they take to their wife. Yeah, I like that. So maybe I don't wish that upon the people that skip our show. But yeah, man, a hex on you.
Harsh words.
And the last one, 10,000 sats from Owen. Thank you for the boost. You guys have been really pumping up the podcast recently, really enjoying them. We're going to have our first ever PEI Bitcoin meetup happening. Boomer, listen to this one. The first meetup will take place mid-August, the final details to be decided, and it's going to happen someplace in Charlottetown. It's going to be informal social meet for the first one, mostly looking to get some Islanders on the same board here. So really, if you want to check it out, go to meetup.com and just type in PEI Bitcoin meetup on the top left-hand corner, and you'll be able to see this and join it. So he also wants to give an additional shout-out to M. Oh, man, this is tough to do. Raghukshi from the Halifax Bitcoin Meetup for helping connect some of the Islander Bitcoins in the first place. So I just want to give that to Owen, at shout out to him. So thank you for the 10K stats. We'll be donating this.
Owen is in the chat, I think. So I'm hyped to see this. And I should say that for the Southern Ontario crowd, I don't know if D's here, but him and I were talking over beers a few weeks ago, and we want to start a regular meetup in Hamilton Dundas, probably at Shed Brewing or the Call-Ins, one of the two. So if you're in the area and you want to contribute to that, or you want to come have beers sometime, we're going to start setting that up. I think this is the time, man. I have never been more bullish between the support the show is getting, the support we see from you guys on Twitter, the stuff going on in, you know, Clown World and Clown World North. It's big, man. So to have guys like Owen and Boomer doing their meetups, and, you know, I think I saw, in London, there was a meetup. Is it tomorrow night with Jimmy Song that Brad Mills is helping organize? Like Tahini's, you know, I see Ali talking about, you know, treat Tahini's like it's your restaurant if you want to do Bitcoin meetups. Like, don't worry about what I think. Just tell me when and tell me where. This is the incredible stuff, man. One thing that stuck with me and continues to stick with me is when Preston was on the show, Pish, talking about how Bitcoiners are net producers. And when you're net producers, you get guys who just know how to get things done, all in the same room, all heading the same direction. And the tailwinds when that happens are incredible. And you're starting to see the results of that now. So I'm super pumped, man. I'm excited to be a Bitcoiner and excited to have the support of all you guys. So thank you once again.
Yeah. And also check us out if you haven't done so on Twitter/X. I don't know what to call it these days. If you haven't followed us, do that. That'd be great. And have you seen the new design of the X logo?
I personally don't care. I'm one of these guys who's like obsessed with the way their like phone home screen looks. So I'm kind of like thinking about what I'm going to do if they come up with a black Twitter logo. Because in my home screen right now, on my dock, I got Spotify, Twitter, TradingView, and Messages. But if he makes Twitter a black icon, I'm going to have three blacks in a row. I won't be able to alternate black color. So disappointing for me as someone who's got like a touch of the OCD when it comes to the home screen. I don't know what I'm going to do, man. Not sure.
You think that they're going to approach the same people that did the OCS logo and pay them $650,000 for that?
They just did the Parks Canada logo too. You see the Parks Canada logo?
No. Is it another?
Well, keep talking. I gotta find it.
Well, for those unaware, $650,000 was allocated and paid out for creating a logo for OCS, Ontario Cannabis. Something, I forget what this S would stand for, whatever
Ontario
it is.
Anyway. Cannabis store. Ontario
store,
cannabis
there store. You go. Yeah, if anyone wants to check it out, it's a joke what it is. The logo is absolute, 10-year-old could have done it. And the
look at this. I'm gonna be less generous than you. This logo, much like the one you just almost said there out loud, is absolute dog shit. Look at how bad this is. What do you think that change cost? It looks to me like they just took out the hash and maybe made the eye look a little bit more freaky. Like, I can just imagine what that cost to do. That's a lot of money probably poured into that. Remember the OCS logo was like, what, $250,000, I think?
No, it was $650,000.
Oh my God, even more. Wow.
And so, but remember, that was in 2016. So given the way things are transitioning with the how much you could buy with the Canadian dollar these days, that's really, you're paying a 10-year-old, you know, a day's sum of, you know, basically like an allowance, and here you go. And then they spit out this thing. What an awful logo that is, by the way. There's no creativity.
Paulie in the chat, by the way, saying it was $1 million for that. I don't know if it was $1 million, but I wouldn't be surprised if, like, even if they did it in-house, it's got to be $500K in salary and process, right?
We have this we're gonna have to give away, but we'll give it away sometime for the show.
Yeah, we'll give it. I already said in the chat. Listen, you we're transparent with you. Okay, we're not giving away at the beginning. It's called retention. Okay, we want you to stick around as long as possible. And so I'm not gonna give it away until later on. You're gonna have to wait. I don't know when we're gonna do it, but it's not gonna be right now. So just get a beer, get a chocolate milk, have some fun with us.
And I just want to say thank you to Bull Bitcoin for giving us $50. I bought $100 worth of Canadian of Bitcoin yesterday evening our time. So I know the price has unfortunately has gone down a little bit since then, but still, it was $100 as of yesterday. And so it's a SaaS card. So thank you to Bull Bitcoin. So sometime today we'll be handing this out, and we'll just dive right in. What do you say, Joey?
Let's dive in. I see the price behind you there. We don't really talk about the price anymore at the beginning of the show. $29,170 US, it looks like. Who cares about the price? Do you care about the price? I don't care about the price right now.
No, if I'm buying, yes. Anything else? No. 38,428 in Canadian dollars. We were 40,000 recently, so we've dipped a little bit. Anyways, RFK, let's lead off with this for the Bitcoin related news. And I'm going to be like really, really brief on this because I want to hand this off to you. I've been critical. Out for the time being. I want to hear your thoughts before I go any further. But really, the gist of it is he came up with two new ideas this past week. And one of them is to exempt Bitcoin holders from capital gains tax. Mm-hmm. And really, this is good politics, I guess, for some Bitcoin, good policy. I'm not sure. I guess this is something we could debate later on, or Bitcoiners in general could debate later on. But the second one was talking about buying Bitcoin with the proceeds of treasury bills. So when they go out and create debt through the sale of treasury bills, it's going to allocate 1% to potentially Bitcoin or gold or silver or platinum. So something which is deemed to be a hard asset. So it's essentially just creating debt. They're always creating debt, but allocating a small portion of it to buy maybe Bitcoin or gold or silver or platinum. And I'm just wondering then if it's that, you know, say they're going to sell treasury bills and make, you know, for $500 million. Are they going to put $505 million, which is 1%, and, you know, basically add a little bit more to the existing what they needed and just add it to Bitcoin, or take away what they're going to be, you know, receiving from their existing sales? I don't know. But anyways, I know there's a pack out there that seems to be out there. They heal the divide. And follow the money here, because this seems to be pretty funny, because it's also co-founded. This is the RFK pack or super pack, depending on how you look at it or define it. The co-founder of this is also none other than David Bailey. He's the Bitcoin Magazine CEO. So there's a lot of connections here that are interesting, to say the least. But I want to hear your thoughts, Joey, because again, I feel like here.
I honestly don't really care what RFK thinks. When I hear stuff like this, you know, you and me talked about this offline, or maybe I sent it to the group chat, I forget, but like when candidates, and again, like I may ruffle some feathers here, but when candidates know they're not going to get the nomination, they basically have two choices. They either throw their weight behind somebody and try and get like a cabinet position or a congressional nod from them down the road or whatever, or they try and pump up their donation numbers. And if I'm looking at what RFK is doing, you know, is he going to get the nomination for the Democratic Party? You know, it's probably about a 0.001% chance, something like that. Super small. And I think that he's clearly found his niche with the Bitcoin community. And I think he's run a smart, sort of savvy campaign using non-traditional means. And I think the other thing the Bitcoin community does, by and large, I don't necessarily agree with this, but one of the other things we do is share on Twitter a lot. There's a lot of people retweeting, quote tweeting, talking about it on podcasts like we are, blah, blah, blah. And so if he wants to get his name out there for donations, this is another good way to do it. From a technical perspective, I do not run a treasury. You do not run a treasury. So this is not, you know, we are not speaking from experience, but rather, you know, as I said before, we are speaking from our basements. I don't understand why you would do this with only 1%. You're still really perpetuating the problem selling treasuries that you're in right now. This idea of 1% into a hard asset doesn't really do anything, especially because most of the hard assets are parked overseas. The US and Canada have very little gold compared to their Eastern counterparts and even places like India, et cetera, right? So I personally don't understand why you would do this or how you would do this. And he's unwilling, for the people who are like talking about, well, he's a Bitcoin guy, he's not even willing to commit to Bitcoin with this. The capital gains thing will never get through Congress because those people are going to be desperate for tax receipts in the next few years, as anyone who kind of follows the way these things typically go knows to be true. And so I just don't think there's a chance that they're going to talk about, you know, letting people who are in what's probably going to be the best performing asset over the next 10 or 20 years evade cap gains when they eventually use or sell the asset. So to me, I don't know, Len, I think it's a publicity stunt. And also, I know you don't listen to All In, but I would suggest people who like RFK and maybe don't agree with his stance on like nuclear energy, for example, is a good one, or aren't, you know, really turned on by the number of hours this guy spends talking about vaccines and vaccine schedules. You may agree or disagree, but as a candidate, this is not a winning strategy. There's no doubt about this. Okay. I'm sorry if it's the first time you've heard that, but it's not a winning strategy. And I think if you like that guy, but maybe have some gripes with some of the ways he speaks or some of the ideas or whatever, I would recommend listening to Vivek Ramaswamy from Saturday's All In podcast. Now, that's a guy who admittedly is probably a bit of a technocrat, but man, is he ever sharp. And he's got some good ideas as well that I think, may be more in the lane of most Bitcoiners as far as sound money, eliminating big government in some respects, talks about eliminating the Department of Education, for example. Great commentary from him on that I won't get into here, but I can't recommend it enough. Now, you think you have a gripe with RFK? Well, I've never heard you really like say anything that I thought this guy's got a slant against them. Why do you think that you have a like?
No,
a
bot? Don't you recall when he went on stage of the Bitcoin conference?
I feel, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, immediately when I saw that, it rubbed me the wrong way, and it seems like internally it's hard for me to find a good narrative of what he does. It's so I could honestly say like I have this unbiased, like it's like this it's a bias I have against, which is unfortunate because it's hard for me to process this and give you a slant that's not really, you know, from the way I'm looking at it. Just it seems like I'm giving you this a biased viewpoint. But one thing is for certain, he's gonna get burned from this. You said he's like,
oh, he'll never be on a stage with Biden. There's just no chance.
Yeah, 100% he's going to get burned. And they're not going to let him become the Dem nominee. There's no way. And there's something else I learned this past week, and it just kind of adds to my thinking of him. Remember when he went on stage on the Bitcoin conference? This was like 2 months ago, whatever the heck it was. At the time when he got on stage, he didn't own Bitcoin. It was just learned, I think, this past week. He bought Bitcoin, or his family bought Bitcoin shortly thereafter. I think the number was around $120,000 to $250,000 US, but I could be wrong on the number, but whatever it is, what I'm trying to get at is he didn't own Bitcoin at the time he got there. And that's my problem with him. He claimed he got Bitcoin as soon as he saw what happened in Ottawa with the trucker situation. And that was well over a year before the Bitcoin conference took place when she stepped on stage. He didn't do a thing. He never mentioned Bitcoin, never even bought Bitcoin. That's like, I don't know. I mean, I look at that.
Unless he's playing 3D chess with OPSEC, maybe. I don't know. But he doesn't strike me as the type. I'm with you. Don't get me wrong. Listen, how many times on this program over the last 2 years have we talked about a politician who says Bitcoin during the campaign, takes Bitcoin donations, talks about how sound money is important? Eric Adams comes to mind, right? Like there's not a dumber communist in the world than that guy. Actually, maybe there's one recently elected here in Ontario, but you know, generally speaking, these guys just use this as a way to gain traction, and they're smart. Bitcoiners are hyperactive on Twitter, like terminally online, will share and retweet and talk about this stuff and demand that content creators talk about it. You know, how many times do we get asked about RFK leading up to that show? Probably a bunch. And it's happened in the past as well. So I get why they do it. But really, it's on us to just kind of, you know, pour a little cold water on stuff like this when it happens. Because clearly here, like I think, I don't want to say we've been fleeced. I don't think he's trying to fleece anybody. But he's clearly got a strategy, a social media strategy that involves, you know, viral content, viral posts. And we're really contributing to that, I think, as a community. So I don't know. That's that is what it is, right?
There are some politicians that are in the Senate or Congress that are pro-Bitcoin. And they have been pro Bitcoin and they've been consistent with their message. Cynthia Lummis comes to mind, Ted Cruz, but there's got to be some on the other side too. I know I named just two Republicans. There are some on the Democrat side, I'm pretty sure of, but I can't name off the top of my head, also have been consistent with their approach about Bitcoin as well. So there are some politicians, and I just don't want it to say that if you're a politician and if you say Bitcoin, we're going to nail you to the cross. No. Like I said, I mean, Lummis and Cruz.
Yeah, and you can be like, I actually think you can be pro Bitcoin without necessarily owning Bitcoin. Like that might be another kind of spicy
thing. Oh, okay, true.
I believe you can be pro, and Bitcoin, again, like I don't want to be a think boy. This is the first fucking story, but Bitcoin means a lot of things. It means like extending your time horizon, thinking about family, health, you know, thinking differently about self-sufficiency and responsibility, about sound money, about economics, about, you know, the kind of printing to oblivion that we're seeing. To me, you know, we own Bitcoin, people who watch a show and all that own Bitcoin, but it means a lot of things if you understand Bitcoin. And the people who understand Bitcoin make a lot of good decisions, it seems like to me. And so if I take in a vacuum, the things that you or I do and have done since Bitcoin, then maybe think about money, for example. You know, my decision-making, my sort of matrix has changed a lot in the last seven years, I guess now. And what I see in myself, those are good things, even if I didn't end up buying Bitcoin back in the day or still didn't buy it now. It's the understanding that really made me a better person. And I think when I look at guys like RFK, do I think that it's possible this guy's a good person but just doesn't own any Bitcoin? Maybe he's unable to make the last connection, right? He can't connect the last few dots. So I don't hold that against him if that's the case. But you know, if I look at Eric Adams, I see a totally different story. I see a guy who claimed he understood Bitcoin, clearly has no idea, clearly doesn't understand almost anything about either economics, demographics, immigration, crime, you name it, right? He's a complete moron. But he was trying to play this card during the campaign. And I think a lot of people fell for it. I don't think we did. I think we said, be careful with this stuff because we've seen this enough times now. But, you know, that's fine with me. If he doesn't want to buy, it's no problem. As long as he understands the ethos and kind of is on the same he's on the same continuum as we are, even if he's not all the way at the end yet.
I think I was one of the people that was very happy that Eric Adams, when he initially said he'd buy Bitcoin. So I was one of the people that was burned in the end. I didn't see this coming.
He said take a salary maybe? Is that what he said? One or the other?
I think so. But either way, he was going to make New York City more pro-Bitcoin. And that was part of his, I don't know if it was part of his campaign, but it's something he mentioned. And that these things just never transpired, never came to fruition. But the one thing I just want, sorry, go ahead.
Scam.
The last thing I want to say about this story is, it's hard for me to talk much about it because I don't know enough, but keep your eyes out for this pack, this Heal the Divide that has David Bailey as the co-founder. There's something here. I just don't know. I'm not able to connect dots. But I'm sure in the future we might be able to, and there's something that
Bitcoin pack, right? Everyone thinks that Bitcoin's going to a million a coin or 500K, like who knows during the next cycle. But the thing is, once you have that kind of firepower, you can influence politics in a meaningful way in the United States, especially as younger candidates become more popular, as policies that we think, and I think are, you know, demonstrably beginning to fail. This stuff will become more palatable for the average person. And when Bitcoin grows in value, that's when you see the change starting to be affected, right? So let's see. I'm always trying to be optimistic, and I am optimistic about this too. RFK, for better or worse, you know, generally the press for Bitcoin was pretty good from him. And so I'll at least give him that. It was good press all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on. And next story I want to talk about is Umbral. I'm not sure if you followed this saga, but for those who are unaware what is Umbral, it's the user-friendly Bitcoin node software that you could load up on your computer and have a node, and it's done in a very user-friendly environment. And somebody done some analysis on the code because this is open source, and it showed off there was something interesting going on behind the scenes with Umbral. And there's now questions that Umbral has been collecting info for its users. And the reason that this is now questioned is because, well, apparently Umbral has been regularly pinging their update server to check if a new Umbral OS update is available. Apparently this is common practice, but this is done over ClearNet. It's not being done over Tor. Hear me out. This is raising a concern with Bitcoiners, and this is to the point that even the co-founder of Umbral came out and was talking about it, Luke Childs, and he was trying to dispel any of the rumors that they are harvesting IPs through their product. And he was saying that Tor is slow and unreliable, yes and yes, and he was also saying that it's sometimes it's clogged up and congested due to DDoS attacks. Agreed, because I've had my issues with Tor, and he's right on all three accounts. But the question I would have for him is, why isn't Tor the default? And you could then opt out of that to go to ClearNet. So you give a user the opportunity to stay protected within the Tor environment. And then if it's slow, if it doesn't work, then you can go to ClearNet. But at least you're initially protected by Tor. So the question is, why is this bad? Well, when you have a Bitcoin node at your home, and it's ClearNet, and it's using your own IP because that information is being sent over to Umbral. Well, your home internet IP address is now being tied to Bitcoin usage. So there's potential doxing here, because then there is a potential that they were able to find out who is indeed a Bitcoiner based on their IP. And using your own node, it's eliminating one of the advantages of doing so, because when you have your own node, and if it's using Tor and all that jazz, if you're going to broadcast a transaction, use your own node, well, it's then anonymously done. So if it's done through ClearNet and it's always this information is being sent over to Umbril, well, you lose that advantage. And this is an hourly ping. This is not like it's just a one day, once a week, once a month thing. It's an hourly ping.
That was the thing that should have set people off, is that frequency. That's just way too much. It's way too much.
Going deeper, Joey, somebody's done some analysis, further analysis. This code about the hourly ping was only added on September 20th, 2022. This is a very recent addition, unless it was moved around in somewhere else in the code. But looking at the GitHub, what's been submitted there, this was only added on September 2022. So it's very, very recent, a little bit more than 3/4 of a year ago. So what I would recommend for people out there who want to run their own node, Bitcoin Core is a good option. I know some people might say it's clunky, it's cumbersome, but it works and it's safe. Another one is Raspi Blitz. I run that for myself. And with that, you also get the added benefit of having a Lightning node. Those are the two I would recommend. Start with Core if you really want to go. And if you want to go a little bit further, then try Raspi Blitz. Stay away from stuff like Umbril, because you're going to lose some advantages here, especially if you could get doxxed in the future. So it's troubling to see this, and I hope they pivot. But you know what? Once you do something like this and you lose faith in the greater public, it's probably never going to come back.
Agree. Start9 is getting a lot of shout outs in the chat too. I think Odell's a guy who supports that company. So I'd be curious to see what their... You know, are they going to run a promo maybe now that Umbril is under some heat? I'm not sure. Core, you know, it is clunky and it does just work. And I'll add one more thing. It's probably one of the most heavily audited pieces of software on the planet. Is it not? Like, how many people have looked through that thing trying to find a way to, you know, attack nodes or whatever, and just so far have not been able to do it? There's probably not a safer piece of software in the world than Bitcoin Core. So here's a question for you, since you're a node guy. How hard is it to do something like, you know, if I don't know if Umbril does Lightning, I believe it does, but if you have an Umbril Lightning node or Lightning implementation, how hard would it be to move that over to something like Start9 or Raspi Blitz? Do you know?
You'd have to close all your channels and put
That's what I was afraid you were going to say. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only, but given the fees today are not that expensive, unless you're like really connected to your channels, you don't want to close them for whatever reason. That's the only option. You're gonna have to close all your channels. Everything's gonna go back to on chain. Then move everything, sweep it from on chain to your wallet, and close the Umbril.
Let me stop you there. Does splicing fix that problem?
The splicing it helps when you're dealing with liquidity issues. So with moving a channel from one service to another, to the best of my knowledge, it doesn't yet exist, this type of technology. So it's built in specifically for the node you have. So unfortunately not. So you have to close everything out.
In the chat here, I don't often promote other people in the chat here, but Darren Honeysett, who's a friend of the show and runs a great YouTube channel, has a Start9 referral code. So if you want to make the switch and have a couple of bucks that you don't want to spend on Bitcoin, you prefer to get a node set up, Darren's your guy. Talk to him. Let's get people on the right stuff here if we can figure it out.
Yeah, Darren, just put your link to your channel in the chat in case people don't already subscribe to
it. Yeah, 100%, yeah.
And so next I want to move on to NASDAQ. We talked about this some time ago, where they were going to be providing custody services for crypto, which is funny. And so back in March, we talked about it when it was announced, and they were planning to release this, what they call a crypto custody service, by the end of the second quarter of this year. Well, the second quarter is come and gone, and it's no longer here. And at the time we were talking about this, this could be a potential 60-102 type scenario, where you have a favorable company that is tied to the fiat markets, and it has some, maybe a lot of assets on it. Well, it's a good place to attack and to basically confiscate people's digital assets. Well, cooler heads have prevailed with respect to this, and they have halted moving forward with the custody service business. So they're no longer going to do the crypto custody business, because they claim they remain committed to supporting digital assets in a variety of ways, but this is not the ones they want to do this. So I guess one of the ways they want to help support it, this is the NASDAQ company that everybody's familiar with them. I guess that they want to deal with potential listing of ETFs along those lines. But I wonder whose bright idea was this to actually bring this up.
I think that's not the reason. So a guy I want to have on the show who I meant to reach out to and I haven't yet, but a guy named Matt Walsh. We actually talked about this because I brought it up like 2 weeks ago. This weird law in the States about firms who custody crypto for other people and the relationship to that firm's balance sheet. In this particular case, it was about banks. But now that I'm hearing you talk about this, I bet you it's the same. And so in the States, there's what's called a capital requirement when you have certain things on your balance sheet, right? If you have certain potential liabilities on your balance sheet or whatever, based on the risk, I guess, associated with those assets, you have to keep on hand a certain amount of cash to match, a certain amount of deposits to match, whatever. And in the States, one of the reasons that the big banks don't do custody is because if the big banks are allowed to do it, everyone's going to do it there. And then they're going to have to keep more cash on hand. They're not going to be able to match, not going to be able to have the ratio, the proper capital ratio. And this is a bill that's been in place for a while that no one really talked about before. And I heard about it a few weeks ago. And Matt Walsh, who you need to follow on Twitter, I think his Twitter handle is Matt Walsh in Boston or something like that, or in Boss or in MA. I forget now, but he does Castle Island Ventures. He's the partner there with Nick Carter. And he's got a great thread on this about how this is the piece of legislation that everyone should be talking about when it comes to why Bitcoin, crypto, and I hate lumping them together, but he's making a good point here. This is the reason why custody cannot happen in the United States for a large institution. And so when NASDAQ says, yeah, you know, we're pretty comfortable in doing the ETF. And I'm sure, Len, they're going to make a pretty nice fee there. Like the traffic alone is going to be pretty substantial for them. I'm 100% sure someone's going to pop a bottle of champagne and cut a Cohiba over that. But I think that there's more here than just we're okay with the fees. Last I checked, these guys are never just okay with the fees. They always want more all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so if they can't get it, there's a reason. And I think this is the reason. I encourage people to look into this. You got to go to that guy's Twitter feed and tweet him. Tweet Matt before I tweet him and tell him he's got to come on the show to talk about this, because I think it's a big deal. And in Canada, we don't really see a lot of stuff like this because we're kind of a small market. No one here is talking about TD doing custody, even though I think they started doing that a little while ago, right? We did a story about that not long ago.
They bought a company
or something.
They brought a company that does that. So, like,
they're waiting in, right? They're waiting in. But here we don't really talk about it that much. But I think that you should go look at that and maybe we can get them on the show to talk about it. It's an interesting topic. And again, not a lot of people thinking about this. Okay, so this is a good point. Benoit in the chat, credit union's like a 6% capital ratio. So what they're saying about the crypto thing is it's near a 100% capital ratio. How the fuck can you custody anything with 100% capital ratio?
Well, Fidelity does this already. Don't they already provide crypto custody?
I don't know. They do.
I'm telling you that they do. So like they're one of the
Fidelity
boys.
Is Fidelity a bank?
I don't know what
do they have a capital ratio? They don't have a capital ratio, but a bank may have a capital ratio. And so this, I think, is the difference. And this is why I was not prepared to go this deep on this topic, but it is worth looking into this and finding out.
Fidelity is not a bank.
It's important. Yeah. So that's probably the difference. And so this is why I think that some of these guys who want to hold this stuff are not quite able to do it in a way that makes sense for them. And this is the reason. It is this piece of legislation. So the capital ratio on Bitcoin and other garbage shit coins, you know, whether it's ETH or WorldCoin, which I'm sure maybe we'll talk about tonight, but
why?
I don't know, for fun. What do you mean? No corner of the week. So anyway, yeah, look into the capital requirements for Bitcoin and crypto in the States. Piece of legislation that everyone should be familiar with. And that's, we should be talking about it. That's why we got to get Matt on.
Well, let's move on. Drive Chain. I'm not sure if you're following this.
Oh, but boy. Paul Stroke. I don't know how to say his last name, but yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Stork. I think that's
Stork.
Stork. Okay. I'm going to use that as his last name, the pronunciation of it. Well, it's a Bitcoin, I'm talking about Drive Chain. It's a Bitcoin layer two that enables shitcoins to exist on top of Bitcoin. This is a very, very generalized way of looking at
But that's not what he says it is. He says that it's a higher quality layer two, right? That's what he says.
And beyond that, it's going to create a lot more incentives for miners out there, as the rewards have every 4 years, and next year is going to happen again. So, well, this is BIP 300 and BIP 301. If anyone wants to look specifically what this is about and really want to look into technicals, those are the two BIPs. And it said here that the layer one rules will never change. This only applies to layer two, and it's in introducing and adding in these opt-in sidechains. And as I mentioned, it's going to help increase the transaction fees. I'm wondering if this is going to help clog the network itself in terms of what we saw not too long ago with ordinals and so forth. But it seems like to me, it looks like it's like creating lightning channels. It's when you're moving Bitcoin from layer one to layer two, there's a transaction that has to be done that has to be somehow noted on the blockchain. So I'm thinking this is what it's going to be like in this respect. But Paul Zdorak, I thought, hoping Ralph's right. This is the guy behind DriveChain. He even says, and I'm going to quote him verbatim here, quote, DriveChain is slightly more risk, end quote. So right there, you're talking about there's an added risk, albeit slightly, by including this. And I want to say, like, stop fucking with our money. Every time we have these situations or these suggestions, tell them to fuck off, because this is our time, our effort, and our energy we're storing here. But he's also taking a shitcoiner approach with respect to getting this marketed. And Paul Zdorak is also behind a company called Layer 2 Labs. They have hired Peter Todd to clarify and publish in writing the pros and cons of DriveChain in detail. So it's essentially, it's a marketing scheme here to try to make this into a reality. And Peter Todd, wasn't he at the Canadian Bitcoin conference?
He was. He's a longtime core dev, probably one of the smartest guys in Bitcoin. You know, that's a heavy hitter.
So he's going to find the pros and cons, but still, it's just one person's opinion in the end. Really, I'm looking at this, and even the guy behind it said this, there's going to be some slight risk involved with this. That alone is a red flag.
Can I ask you slightly more risk than what, though? Than L1, than Lightning, than what?
And not having the inclusion of it.
Okay.
Creates some riskiness.
Creates risk on layer one, you're saying?
Creates risk for Bitcoin in totality.
Okay.
Right? If it's going to be through clogging of the network or...
Yeah,
I'm sure... And you could try to plot this out and you could try to find all different ways of looking at this. But somebody out there may find something that is very creative, and the slightly risky way of looking at it becomes a huge risk, because Bitcoin is something, let's be honest, there's a lot of big entities out there that would like to see it taken down. Why give them an opportunity to do so? Why give them even open a door slightly? No, you shut that fucking door and you seal it shut. This is something we should not even deal with, period.
Yeah, Len, the surface area for attacking Bitcoin's, you know, minuscule. It's so small. It's mostly social at this point. The code seems to be more or less bulletproof, and layer one, short of a fork that makes a significant change to the code base, is basically untouchable at this stage. I don't know why you would ever introduce risk. I understand that there's people who, you know, when you think about like the way we've adopted some of the recent BIPs, right? Like Taproot's a good example. What was the name of the mechanism we used for that? Speedy trial, where it'll never happen again because of the mistakes that, you know, the sort of second order effects that we didn't consider. I say we as if I knew what the hell was going on, but that Bitcoiner just didn't consider. To me, I would say to guys like Paul, who I think is not a you know, nefarious actor. Also, same with Peter. I don't think he's a nefarious actor at all. I would say, if you think that this thing is going to be good for Bitcoin, fork off and build it on a fork and prove it, and let the market decide. And that's got to be, I think, the response generally speaking to anyone who wants to make an improvement that could conceivably add surface area to the attack possibility on Bitcoin. Like, I don't know, it's not hard to fork Bitcoin. In fact, thousands of people have done it, much less intelligent than those two guys. And so if they want to do it, they can do it pretty easily. And they have the following on social media, they have the clout as well to really make that happen. And, you know, if they want to do that, then they can do it. But I don't want to play with my Bitcoin. For people who are in the chat and listening on audio, Len just sent me a private message on here. It says, should we give away the Sats card now? I'm gonna say no. We're gonna go a little bit longer and then we'll give it away.
Oh, see, ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to be.
You guys can't just fucking wait. Although I do, there's a lot of people here, which is great. I'm glad you guys came, but we're almost there. We're almost there.
So U.S., they're selling some more Bitcoin. It's been revealed this past week that Uncle Scam. So they confiscated Uncle Scam a whole bunch of Bitcoin from the Silk Road project. The number I have here is around 50,000 Bitcoin in total. And Uncle Scam, they've been periodically selling it. And this past week, they sold off a little bit more of it. So on-chain analysis shows that 8,200 Bitcoin was sold off. And I'm wondering if this could have made some, you know, it would change the price of Bitcoin slightly, because that's a heck of a lot of Bitcoin that was dumped in the market in a very short period of time. To give you an idea, that's 9.1 days of block rewards to get to 8,200 Bitcoin. So that's a lot of mining just to get to 8,200 Bitcoins. And the mechanism where the company they use to sell this, of course, it's Coinbase, the company that the SEC is suing. Just seems very ironic that they're suing them on one side and they're using their services on another. But yeah, there you go. I mean, they sold a whole bunch of Bitcoin, and the United States is just, you know, they're going to have fun staying poor without having any Bitcoin on the balance sheet. But I'm sure there's going to be a way for them to confiscate more Bitcoin moving forward.
I love that. Do you think that the guy, do you think Obama's personal chef who just washed up like on shore next to his Martha's Vineyard mansion dead, do you think he had any Bitcoin from the Silk Road?
Wait.
Breaking news.
Oh my God. Was it Obama's personal chef?
It was either climate change or some other sort of existential problem.
Did he get too close to fires? You know,
He was killed by forest fires.
Yeah, that's a tough way to go.
Listen, I'm not going to talk about that guy, but that is a wild story. Maybe we talk about that in the after show. But the thing I'd say about the government selling Bitcoin, let them. These guys are so the confidence on these guys, Len. You know, I could only dream of being that confident that the US dollar is going to work out. So they're so sure that they just keep dumping this stuff on the market every time they get their hands on 200,000, 500,000, 200,000, 100,000, 90,000, whatever, over the years. And there'll be more coming, by the way. I know we talk all the time about how Bitcoin is for friends and enemies. Sometimes that means proceeds of crime will be in BTC. You know, you might measure a drug deal in sats. Those are the breaks, man. And the government, in my view, you know, Len, it seems to me they're quicker to hang on to things like cars and jewelry than they are to hang on to Bitcoin. And I don't understand it. Like, the confidence is just unbelievable. And I just think, you know, you haven't been right about a lot lately. You really think you're going to be right about that? I'm not sure. Boomer, he drove his EV2 close to a gas stove. Damn, man. RIP. God bless him. Making eggs in the sky now.
So I guess one last story I'll bring up is the UAE and Marathon. They have, they're teaming up. It was announced a few months back that the company Marathon Digital Holdings, the mining company out there, they're going to be doing some operations in Abu Dhabi, and it's going to be an immersion Bitcoin mining operation specifically. And this is going to add roughly 7 exahash, and it's going to go online in 2024. We normally don't talk about these type of stories, but I want to talk about this one specifically because they're going to be using the Middle East to do some mining. So the first containers have been already delivered to the Mina Zayed facility and have been powered up. So they're already ramping up their mining operations over there. These are two mining sites with a combined 250 megawatt capacity. This is not chump change in terms of electricity. It's a lot of electricity they're going to be using to mine Bitcoin. And roughly 7 exahash is a decent amount. And they are going to be powering these facilities with excess energy from Abu Dhabi's grid. And even though it's very hot in that neck of the woods, they're going to be using immersion cooling to try to deal with the excess heat. So what I'm trying to get at here is that part of the world has a lot of energy, and they don't have the same type of bullshit that other parts of the world do with ESG. If they want to get something done, if they have they are just trying to achieve results. Whatever way possible, they're going to get there. And if we don't want mining operations in certain parts of the world, well, the Middle East are going to be happy to take it on. They're going to monetize their excess electricity, and they'll do this, and they're going to reap the rewards. If we don't take action soon, this is a big thing we're going to lose, and we can't play catch up. So it's more a call to action than anything else. We shouldn't lose focus here. We have a lot of mining in North America. We should keep it here if at all possible.
It's such a huge mistake. Like, do these guys, are they not watching what's going on as like the UAE is slowly taking over parts of the entire global energy market, American cultural landmarks like the PGA, you know, they're paying, you know, do you think this is a big expenditure? These guys are paying Kylian Mbappe, I think what, $900 million to play soccer over there this year, $900 million for a year. Believe me. As long as that black gold is flowing, these guys got money for days, and they're going to use it for all the things that we should have been using it for. But instead, what are we doing? Turbines, EV charging stations. Do you know how many EV charging stations are at Limeridge Mall? I drove by there the other day. There's got to be 100 of them, and there's always one car there.
You know what?
We paid for those, Len. We paid, you and me and everyone here paid for those chargers. You know, Cadillac Fairview didn't pay for the chargers. The guys who drive in the Teslas didn't pay for the chargers. We paid. We paid. What do we do? Like, it's crazy. Clearly, there is a problem here somewhere. I don't know. I'm not saying where, but somewhere there's a problem.
That's a good transition to Clown World stories. We'll do one, and then if you want to rhyme off this thing, we can. So there's a whole bunch of electric cars out there that are not sold, and they're piling up on the lots of these things. People like the idea, but they're not buying them. So the supply of unsold EVs in United States dealer lots, it swelled 350% this year alone. And right now, the unsold units sit around 92,000 in June. So the average EV costs 64,000 US. And somebody did some analysis here, and the biggest loser from all this is Genesis. That's Hyundai's luxury brand. They only sold 18 of their high-end 18. That's like a little bit more.
Oh my God.
That's every 2 days.
That's more than I sold.
So, you know, whoever was the guy that sold it must have made a, you know, anyway. Those are for 80,000 US. That's the price tag for those Genesis models. And so there's a whole bunch of units that are unsold. And by comparison, dealers only have 54 days worth of gas-powered vehicles under lots. And that's much less than the usual threshold of 70 days. So there's more people that want these gas-powered cars, and they're willing to buy it because, you know, the average cost of a gas-powered car is around 30,000 US. That's less than half the price of the EV. So the proof is in the pudding. And this is only going to get more problematic moving forward because there's going to be more electric cars that are going to be produced and pushed on lots and so forth, and less gas cars that are going to be available to us. So there's going to be a divide. And this is all because of policy more than anything else. And if you really want a gas-powered car, man, it's going to be tough to get it moving forward as a result. But yeah, well, if you want to get one of those EVs that are sitting in a lot collecting dust, I'm sure you could get a decent deal, but it's going to cost, you know, still a lot of money in the end.
I was listening to Anas Al-Haji and Eric Townsend on Macro Voices this morning, and I'm kind of half listening. I was working out too, but the thing that struck me about what Anas and Eric were saying was that it seems like, you know, they're right. And it's happened, you know, you and me have talked about it on the show, but it really is accelerating. There's a complete unraveling of the environmentalism basically all over the world. Like, Europe seems to be done with it. We're basically done with it here. Like, no one is really happy about the carbon tax and this other nonsense that's going on here. They just gave me $200 for climate change, I guess, whatever. I'm not sure how me buying Bitcoin helps fight climate change, but whatever. You know, people are tired of paying these kind of punitive charges all the time for, you know, nebulous goals that really have no, you know, discernible goalposts. No one knows where this ends. You know, I think our own finance minister a couple of years ago, I believe in 2020, said that even if all Canadians stopped emitting carbon, it wouldn't move the needle, right? And yet here we are in Toronto talking about banning leaf blowers.
Yeah, two-stroke powered.
These are unserious people. And I think a lot of Canadians are kind of waking up to this fact. And certainly, you know, in places like Europe where the energy independence is, you know, only something that can be dreamt of. It's clear that this isn't working. I guess my question about the EVs though is, you know, if you buy a Tesla now, or I don't know, like one of these other EVs, they're a lot of money. I was just cruising Auto Trader the other day. You can get a Civic, 2014 Civic for under 10 grand. So
that's a decent price.
That's pretty good,
by the way. Yeah, that's not bad.
That's pretty good. And so I was kind of joking with myself, just saying like, man, if I want to replace my Volvo in the next few years, like I'm probably going to be able to get a pretty decent deal on like a 2014, 16 range Civic or Accord or something like that. And that car is going to last me till I'm 50. You know, like these things, the planned obsolescence you're seeing in a lot of other domains, you don't really see it in automotive, except where there's tons of electronic parts and, you know, short lifespan batteries. And so why would you ever go this direction if you're trying to buy a vehicle in a down economy with interest rates on car loans all the way through the roof? This isn't a sustainable model. And don't forget, for a long time in Canada, we were subsidizing those purchases. You and I work with a fellow who bought, this may have been after your time, but who bought a hybrid Jetta And famously, the ticket price was like $48,000, and he got it for like $37,000 and was calling it a deal. Like, I don't personally view that as a deal, but I guess $11,000 is $11,000. You know, that's not a bad rebate from the province. Again, who's paying for that? It's me and you, right? Some way, somehow. And I think as those programs kind of mature and don't roll over, you're going to start seeing people say, ah, you know what? I'll pass. I'd rather pay the extra 30 cents at the pump than have to worry about buying a car. Or, you know, I'd rather buy a car where the worst thing that can happen is like, I need an oil change. My timing belt snaps or something.
Oh, the timing belt snaps is done. These are interference motors.
I snapped a timing belt on my Passat years ago on Cooch Drive. And I basically had to get a new car, obviously.
Yeah.
But then to replace the engine in that car was $3,000. So I just bought a new car. But, you know, Len, if you go on Twitter and look at Tesla repair bills, you can see a lot of bills for a lot more than $3,000 for stuff that's a lot, you know, in principle anyway, a lot less serious than a timing belt snapping on you. And, you know, I don't see how people are going to continue to go down this road with those cars. I think those times are, I don't want to say quickly coming to an end, but I think they are coming to an end.
I don't know. It's hard to say. Again, I know somebody that owns a Tesla got rid of all his other cars because he liked, and he had some very sporty cars too. And he loves his Tesla, and it requires very little maintenance to keep it going. The biggest thing that's on that thing, that's the costliest thing, is the battery. As long as that thing is running, then the car itself has value. But anyways, I think it's time, Joey. I think it's time.
He's not even private messaging me. You're just putting me on the spot. Okay,
this is the best way to do it.
So I'll just say to the benefit of all the people in the chat, okay, I know I said that you'd have to put in your name by yesterday night, but I pulled these names. If you're in the Discord, you can see me putting in the Carlbot commands. I pulled these names. Like, yeah, an hour and a half ago at about 6:30. So you're lucky. If you were late, you're lucky. That's all I can say.
Sir Snacks a lot. I hope I said your name correctly this time, Sir Snacks.
Best show ever. God bless you. Okay, hold on. Let me find this. Okay, one spin. Everybody knows the rules. This is the wheel of names. We use this all the time. If you have a problem with the legitimacy of the draw,
hang on. On the audio side, we're giving away $100 worth of, well, yesterday was $100 worth of Bitcoin on this Sats card. So if you want, we'll do this again, I guess, sooner or later again.
If we get to 40 something people every time we do this for the live stream, then I don't mind doing this more often. It's fine.
Maybe next week, maybe not. We'll make it known.
Yeah. Okay. You ready? Here we go.
Let's do it. And hopefully this person, whoever wins this, is in the chat. If not, after a minute,
we'll be in the chat. We'll give you a minute, and then we're calling somebody else.
So I change it to ultra low latency or whatever. So that way it's going to be the quickest exchange between us. And it's hard to read it.
There's your winner, Boilermaker Zero. Who is that? Who's Boilermaker Zero?
Is Boilermaker Zero in the chat, in the YouTube chat? If so, please say you're here. And if not, then we're going to have to do this again. You know, we can go to the next story.
Boilermaker Zero. Give it a sec here. To answer a couple of questions, Paulie, you're entered automatically if you're in Discord. I dumped all the names from Discord. Give it a sec. Boilermaker. Eggshi already saying in the chat, he's not here. Okay, we'll decide if he's not here. Okay, everyone wants another shot. So people are saying you can at the name. I can't actually at anything from StreamYard. So also the names will be different. Who's Joey Tweets on YouTube? Someone else is running under my name on YouTube?
What the heck is that? We had the Achilles, we had the ACL. Jesus now we Christ. Have you.
Now people are just stealing the handle all wholesale. I can't add anybody, and people's Discord names are different than their YouTube names. So I'm gonna guess we're good here. Let's roll it again.
Skip it. Go to the next one. So sorry.
Okay, hold on. We're gonna pull them off the list.
All right.
Just gonna check one more time. Okay, here we go. Wasn't there a sound effect with this before? I thought there was.
There is. I could hear it.
Oh, okay. I can't hear it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Who is it? Beer Baron, it looks like. Ooh, I spoke too soon. Corn Cob Cletus. Who are you? Where are you? What's going on?
I like the name Corn Cob. Very nice.
Corn Cob Cletus. Corn Cob Cletus.
You're getting chirped in the chat there.
I can't believe people, like, I'm flattered, I guess. Like, what is it? What do they say about imitation? It's the best form of
flattery.
Yeah. So maybe that's good. But Rand Moore, still no takers here. Corn Cob Cletus. There's 120 entrants, I think. What does it say on the website there? It should say on the
Do the next one, Joey. Screw it, because if corn cob comes up, we'll just stop it, but we'll just keep going until, you know what I mean? We could accelerate
this. Okay, ripping. Here we go.
No show. Yeah, I agree. No show.
Let's see who we got. Who we got. Who we got. Who we got. It was almost Adam O'Brien. We should have taken him.
Rage Cage McBeard.
Who are you, Rage Cage McBeard? This is so funny. There's 40 people in the chat, so we shouldn't be spending that long. Rage Cage McBeard. Here we go. Come on. Come on now.
Okay, you know what? Just cancel it and go again. If Rage Cage shows up, we'll just, you know, at least we're accelerating the process.
Okay, hold on. Remove. Next. Because right. You guys should see the spin basically as soon as it happens, right? On low latency or ultra low?
Yeah, just about. It's pretty quick.
Okay. Who's this now? Folks. Folks. That's your Discord name, by the way. It's your Discord name. It's your Folks on Discord. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come
this
on.
This is awful. Somebody. How come nobody's winning this? You know what? Screw this. I'm taking this and keeping it.
This is good content. Good audio content, especially. At least you're on video, you can see how good the wheel spins. But okay, here we go. Let's try another one. Remove Folks. Yeah, all right,
keep going. We're just
good try. Good try. Let's see here.
Someone in the chat.
Down to 115 people. Down to 115 people. Oh wow, Sills. I actually know who that is. I wonder if he's here. Sills, are you there, Sills?
Yes, Mr. Sills.
Sills, are you there? That's fucked if he wins again.
It's the second time he's gonna win something.
Sills, I'm surprised he's not here.
He's here. He's here. He is. Oh, jeez.
Man. Unbelievable luck.
Congratulations, Mr. Sills.
What else did Sills win?
He won a ticket to the Canadian Bitcoin Conference.
The conference. Sure? That's what it was. You're right.
So, yeah. You know what? I'll just drive it over to you, Sills, and then we'll go from there. So, I'll get in touch with you.
I can always bring it. I'm gonna see Sills tomorrow probably. So
I have it in my hand.
You have it. Yeah. Fuck yeah. Yeah.
So okay. I'll make a trip and do something. Okay. Anyway, Sills, we'll get in touch. Congratulations and everybody.
Good job.
You know what? It's been good. We'll do the same thing next week.
You want to do it again?
We'll do this again. So another $100 is going to be given away next week by Hooker. By
same thing. Same rules. Get in the Discord. Come to the chat around the same time. Maybe not around the same time. Sometime during the hour and a half, we'll give it away. No guarantees on when, but we're going to do it again. Fuck it. Why not? Let's do it. Yep.
All right. Let's move on. FedNow. They just released this past week their participants that are going to be taking part in the whole FedNow debacle. And Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, and 35 others are going to be, and banks and credit unions are also listed on there. This is the instant payments system that is going to facilitate and execute payments 24/7, 365 days a year, 366 if it's a leap year. They say it's going to be going live within the next 2 weeks. Why is this noteworthy? This is more digitization of our money, but of note, I'm going to stand on this hill and I'll die in it. This is not a currency. So this is not a CBDC. This is simply facilitating the movement of payments between these banks and credit unions. Will this eventually transition into a CBDC? Potentially, but this is not a currency. So I just wanted to stress that. So a lot of people are looking at this and talking about CBDC. It may be something, you know, in the topic of discussion, but it's definitely not it.
Heard so much about FedNow over the last few months, and I at first was kind of, I don't want to say in a different boat than you, because I think that I do appreciate that this is like an interbank settlement mechanism. Great, fine. But you know what? I'm not sure why introduce this so publicly if it's only going to be for banks. Like, why is it such a big deal? The Fed talking about this, they're kind of tweeting about it. It's kind of public news. A lot of stuff the Fed does is not public news, especially not stuff on the technical side. So my question is, are they kind of greasing the wheels here a little bit to say, hey, banks are doing this. Maybe you want to do it too. To me, that's the next maybe step. And the only reason I'm saying that is because of the public facing nature of all the announcements and all the commentary about this. And it's not just on Bitcoin Twitter. It's in a lot of other places too. So it's not just us that are seeing this. There's a lot of people seeing it. I believe that this is maybe a bit of a, you know, a bit of a warm up for what might come next. I mean, here's the other question, Len. If you think that this is not a CBDC, which, you know, I agree with you, you think they're going to call the CBDC something different, or are they going to call it FedNow as well? FedNow Retail, FedNow, you know, whatever. It's going to be in a similar vein. It'll be similar tech probably. To me, I think that's why you're seeing it so openly discussed. I think this is going to eventually become a retail tool.
What about EUSD or something along those lines?
Who knows?
I don't know.
I think the reason it's public is because people are going to eventually be, you know, shown this and given the opportunity to use it, and they don't want it to be the first time. That's all.
Yeah. Well, anyways, let's move on. U.S. government, their interest on their debt has ballooned. Now it is now higher. The payments they're going to be making on their debt is going to be higher than what they're spending on defense. And this is notable because the United States spends the most by far on their defense in comparison to any other country in the world. So to put this in perspective, the United States military, everybody knows it, is world renowned. It has all this technology and manpower, people power behind it. They spend a lot of money, but they're spending now more just to service the debt. Mm-hmm. And this is a trend that is going in the wrong direction. It's not like tomorrow it's going to be reversing and they're going to be spending more on their military and less on their servicing the debt. They keep adding to the debt, and the amount of money that's going to be spent to service it will go up. And especially if they continually raise rates, that's also going to be problematic for them moving forward. And this is money that could have been earmarked for something else. It could be for infrastructure, for healthcare, for social services, for anything. But they're using it to pay debt. That is pissing away money. And the way they're going to be paying for this, well, they're just going to borrow more. It's not like they're going to raise and pay through this through taxation. It's going to be through debt. And it's just going to compound the problem and get worse. And it's just, I look at this and it's a ticking time bomb.
Well, when people say that the government is likely to either do some kind of debt jubilee or soft default via inflation and printing, isn't this really the reason? This is at the core of that argument, that the debt becomes unserviceable unless you inflate away some grand percentage of it through printing and through quantitative easing or some other monetary vehicle yet to be named. I think that when people talk about that, this is why they're saying that. And by the way, America still does some level of productive work. You know, Canada doesn't do any productive work. It's purely a financialized economy / real estate bubble. And we're entering into the same problem without the power of the printer that those guys have. And I'd be curious to know what our national debt to GDP is. I know our household debt to GDP is like one of the worst in the world, but you know, all these things combined and considered together, this is the reason why people say a debt jubilee is coming. And actually, I was listening to Ritesh Jain today. He was doing a space with Michael Gayed, the lead leg guy. Obviously, Ritesh, friend of the show. I was listening to that for a bit. Very strong. Ritesh makes a lot of good points with some updated data that Canada is really in like tumultuous waters here and pretending they're not. And it's you know, there's never been an example of a country that's come out of this kind of debt to GDP with this much financialization, this much of a reliance on one quote unquote sector. Can you even call housing a sector if it's GDP? Like, come on. You're really seeing what's gonna become a huge problem brewing up here in Canada. And so I know this story is about America's debt to GDP, but given that Canada is in a worse spot and has less options in terms of getting out of it, it's gonna be fun to pay attention to all this stuff. And don't forget, like the election's coming up next year, halving's coming up next year. You may have more talk about CBDCs, more talk about Bitcoin, more clarity on regulatory burdens or cumbersome issues as far as like holding Bitcoin, using Bitcoin in the States. And here, this next 18 months is going to be super important for the future of Bitcoin, probably for the future of most modern economies.
Well, Canada, I mean, I'll talk briefly about Canada. Canada does have a few things that is going for them. And we have energy that we export a lot of, clean water, drinkable water. A lot of the world doesn't have this lumber, maple syrup. I mean, we have that too. We export that.
Le Bat Saint-Gant, like the guys at Bolse, the meilleur bière.
There are a lot of natural resources we could use. You could dare say exploit, but that's what we have over here. And the finance sector, it's driving some cities like Toronto. Like if you go in Toronto in a downtown core, it's primarily all fueled by the financial sector. And if something happens to that sector,
It's going to just take a huge toll to the city of Toronto and the surrounding region and the country as a whole. But to go back to your saying the debt jubilee, I'm wondering, you know, Biden keeps trying, or Team Biden keeps trying to do the student loans where they try to forgive a certain amount and it seems to be struck down by the court and they come again, try this again. It seems like that's the first hurdle.
You're right.
Like, and because it's not like they could do like credit cards. It's not like they could do like mortgages.
They can. Okay, so they can, but they have to do it through inflation, right? The same way they inflate away. And so I think when people say debt jubilee, it's not going to be Biden getting on TV in the Oval and going, everyone is at zero now. It's, you know, that's not it. In the same way that people are like, well, the Great Reset. No, man, it's not going to be like that. It's not going to be like one moment you can point to and watch a YouTube video of. It's going to be a decade of policy where people are able to get back on their feet if they use the tools at their disposal, both direct and indirect, to do so. But I think, you know, anyway, I don't want to cut you off. Keep going. Sorry, I was on a bit of a tangent there.
For politics, they may want to do this for all debt that is federally created. So the student loans is a federally created debt.
Yep.
So they have the ability, if they want, to say, you know what, whoever owns it, it no longer owes the money, and we'll just collectively add it to the pot. So they, anything else that falls along those lines, that's why they can't do it with like credit card debt, because that is a personal debt, ditto with mortgages and so forth. But anything that comes from the federal government, that type of debt, they may want to start doing that. I'm not saying they may want it, they may consider doing that because it's good politics moving forward, and it could capture a lot of people and make them happy and make them vote in that, and it compounds from there. But in,
I mean, what was the student debt voting, the vote buying attempt, like how much was that? 40 billion? What was the number? It was some unbelievably high number. It was huge. Probably more than that, actually, but it was huge.
Yeah,
people want that, they do here too, right? These grocery subsidies and like Jagmeet talking about fucking mortgage subsidies. Like, bro, what the fuck are you talking about? That's inflationary. Everything these guys, I'm going to try not to roll downhill here because we're low on time, but everything these guys propose to fix the problem is going to make the problem worse. And either they know and they don't care, or they don't know. But in either case, you know, all of us pay the price at the pump, at the grocery store, everywhere. It's always us. And I don't understand how this could be possible. Like, you could just go on Twitter and read like, you know, a handful of tweets from the right people and go to a space or something and that's it and figure it out. But no one seems willing to do it. So here we are now, 3 years later after COVID, and we're still having some of the same problems. We're pretending inflation is low. I don't know if inflation is probably on the list of topics tonight.
Since let's talk about it now. But what's the name of the Discord? I'm just going to punch in the invite on the chat. So anybody that's in the chat right now that's not part of our Discord, you can just simply accept that invite. But anyways, Clown World North, let's go to that. CPI for Canada came in for the month of June, and the number is 2.8%. And this followed a 3.4% that was reported back in May. Now, remember, 2.8% was the number for June. So Canadians, this is according to StatsCan, so I'm not pulling this shit out of thin air. Canadians continue to see elevated grocery prices of 9.1% year over year and mortgage interest cost of 30.1% in June. So food and shelter, 9.1%, everybody's taking that up the rear end. And the cost of shelter, 30.1%. Not everybody's taking this because these are for people that are renewing their mortgages. So there's still people that have locked in and haven't yet felt the effects. But it's coming for those people. Everybody's going to feel this. So even rent is through the roof. So food and shelter is double digits or near double digits. I don't know how they were able to massage this to be 2.8%, because nobody could get by without food, and nobody, except for, I guess, the few homeless in downtown Toronto and just about every other city center in this, I guess, neck of the woods, they could do without shelter. Everybody fucking needs this, right? But even after this, the 2.8% that was reported, we had our finance minister go out and it was saying that this is a milestone moment that they reached the 2.8%.
Again, I can't believe that.
I think that these numbers were massaged. I could be wrong. This is just my gut feeling. But she said this while talking to her G20 counterparts in India. So traveled all the way there to talk to her counterparts, climate change. And then shortly thereafter, traveled all the way back to North America, went to Aspen, Colorado,
And so more climate change. And he was talking about 2.8% achievement over in Aspen being a great thing. And but nobody was clapping for some reason, because I guess either nobody cared about Canada
Jeb
or
there. You got to get Jeb there to encourage people to clap. Please clap.
Low energy. But and something that is noticeable, notable here is that there's something called insolvency statistics in Canada for May of 2023. I know it's a couple of months back, but this was just reported. So the total number of insolvencies, this is bankruptcies and proposals in Canada, increased by 13.8% in the month of May 2023 compared to the previous month. So month over month, 13.8% it went up for bankruptcies, sorry, for insolvencies. Bankruptcies increased by 19% and proposals increased by 12.2%. And I think that this number is going to continually spike up as they continually raise rates. They're going to be asking for a repayment of the COVID loans that is due at the end of this year. A lot of these businesses are just not going to be able to make ends meet. Also, they have to pay more money for their staff because, well, everything costs more. So the total number of insolvencies in May 2023 was 30.9% higher than the total numbers of insolvencies in May of 2022. So year over year went up 30.9%. Consumer insolvencies also increased 30.1%. So that's insane. So if you want to break it down, business insolvencies was 59.1%. So combined, it turned into 30.9%. But really, this is absolutely nuts. Insolvencies are going through the roof. And this is something that will have to be addressed, because as more people declare bankruptcy, more people will end up on the streets because they don't have the ability to pay their rent. Nobody's going to want to accept them as a rental. In fact, there's one couple that wanted to pay 2 years worth of rent up front, and they aren't able to find the fucking place. Yeah. Like, it's absolutely insane. So, you know, you see this, and it just, everything is trending in the wrong direction. And it's going to be a matter of time, but they're going to have to start helicoptering even more money. That groceries rebate, well, or whatever they called it a few months ago, is going to be, they got to do that again, but maybe change the name and increase the amount.
Well, you heard what the Bank of Canada said about the insolvencies the other day, didn't you?
No.
That we actually shouldn't be looking at them, because they're only called insolvencies if they're from the solvency region in France. Otherwise, they're just sparkling bankruptcies. And so we don't actually need to worry about them.
Very nice.
Listening to Ritesh today, he was saying that the Bank of Canada, or the Canadian banks had somewhere in the neighborhood of 4% of their loan books, their mortgage loan books, extended past 30-year AMs last year. And now that percentage across the big four is somewhere between 25 and 35%. So, you know, they're talking about kicking the can down the road. If there ever comes a time when banks just say, and it looks like they're doing this, by the way, they're going to start pulling back on some of these like insane measures that are being encouraged by different parts of the, you know, decision-making structure, to put it kindly. If they ever pull back on this and say, look, it's too risky, we're not going to do this anymore, we're not giving people loans, LTV is way overextended, our capital ratios are no good, blah, blah, blah. The sums of money people are going to have to pay to get their loan back in order, they're going to be astronomical, and they're going to be difficult to stomach, and no one's going to be able to do it. And then you're going to start to see real crashes. There's a guy I follow on Twitter called, I think he's called Economic Woes. And his pinned tweet is a picture of a bear, a cartoon bear that everyone knows, sitting in bed. And he's talking about how he's not a real estate bag holder, and his savings are getting 5% while he lives in his mom's basement, and he's sleeping really well. And it's funny, but also unfortunate, because a lot of people took on mortgages, especially variable rate mortgages, during the pandemic, and gave themselves no wiggle room, way overextended on the purchase price, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, as you're seeing in places like Hamilton, you know, if you want to talk about insolvencies, people talk a lot about real estate and the mortgage rates. How about your property tax? Your property tax in Hamilton is going up 11% next year. You know, like that's a pretty big jump for people who are close to the edge. If you got a kid in school, your food price, you know, that 9% is really hitting you hard. If you got car repairs to do or whatever, you know, any number of these things. And what you got to ask yourself, if you're living in one of these cities where these are problems, you know, what have you gotten in return? Can you point to anything? Exactly. You can't point to anything. You can't, honestly, man, like it's a kind of a somber slash, you know, melancholy thing to joke about, but you know, if you go to the hospital with a broken wrist, they just might tell you to kill yourself after you wait for 16 hours to see a doctor. You know, I get that that's a bit of an exaggeration, but the fact that people talk about this at all should be a signal to the powers that be that something needs to change. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem like anyone is willing to make that leap. And don't get me wrong, it's not that I sympathize with polls over this, but I think that it's a difficult decision that needs to be made, and someone's going to have to wear it at some point, either because they made the decision or because they have no choice. And the question is who, right? Who's going to be the guy without the chair when the music stops? I think we're getting closer and closer.
We are going to be the ones. You know what?
Well, but you know what I mean? Like, who's going to be the guy?
But really, like, we're the ones that.
Yeah.
No, even if we're going to sit on a chair, it's going to have a spike in it, so it goes right up our hoop. Freeland, did you hear about this? She rejected Toronto's bailout request. I've never heard this before.
I saw that.
Olivia
Chow's household's in good shape. They got a lot of savings, the preloaded stimulus.
I've never seen this before, that a city in Canada was just asking for money that this, like the way it is right now, they're asking for, they call it a bailout. That's absolutely insane. And brutal. But you know what? The feds decided, you know what? It's not our problem. It's the province's. Because ultimately it is. I mean, they do roll up to the province. So initially, at least, well, I guess more so they, if you look down the line, it's the feds. But anyways, good on the feds for saying no, because there's not enough money to go around. And this is another example. But you know what was interesting is that they did give Toronto some money. They gave $100 million to help out refugees that were seeking shelter, that were living in Toronto. And these are refugees that came to Toronto. And because there wasn't enough housing or it wasn't enough shelter available, they were actually living in tents on the street, which was really sad. So the Fed decided to help them up and say, you know what, we'll give $100 million so that they can now be roomed and boarded in hotels. But there's two sides to look at this. They're human beings. These are human beings, and with, you know, they deserve to have, I mean, there should be some dignity that they be treated with. So living on the street is not the way to do it. Like that's a sad way. And it's a sad way to project Canada's image as well. But on the flip side too, there's also a whole bunch of homeless in Canada that don't have the ability to get housing. In fact, if you want to get an subsidized housing, the waiting list is decades long. And so you look at this and it's like, you know, they're getting this, but you know, people that were here that were presumably paying taxes here are getting nothing. But the flip side too, they're living in shelters. They're living in tents. And
the question, this is to me the problem, right? And I'm not saying that you're making a mistake in going down this road. My dispute with that, my problem with that, is that people who support that $100 million will frame it in the way you just framed it. They're humans. They're living in tents. We need to help them. Well, how you should frame it is, show me, if you want to help them, that's fine. Show me your pecking order for the $100 million. How did you decide that they should get it before we should get it, or before schools in Ontario should get it, which are completely a fucking disaster, or before hospitals should get it, which are a fucking disaster, or before roads or police or whatever should get it? How did you decide? Show me your metrics. Be transparent. They can't, because there is no decision-making matrix that makes sense. The reason they're doing this is because it's popular on the international stage. And we get to pretend to be a G7 country, of which, by the way, we are not. By any metric, we're not a G7 country. I don't know how the hell we are able to maintain that facade.
Is Italy part of it?
Italy shouldn't be either. But someone pointed out in the Financial Post the other day, Len, that by almost every metric, we're worse than Italy, economically, demographically, everything. We're somehow worse off. And so I should share that. I can't remember when I read that. It was like a week ago now. But it's a problem with the transparency. Again, how did you decide that $100 million should go to this cause when there's already a bunch of people living in tents? You know, we were joking, again, kind of haphazardly, tongue-in-cheek about the tents, talking about the tent meeting in Hamilton a few weeks ago. Why isn't there $100 million going to help those guys? We can't do an employment program for 10,000 people with $100 million. I'm sure we could. You can't do basic education, you know, refurbishing and improvement of an entire province worth of schools on $100 million. You can't give 100 schools $1 million, whatever, right? There's a million other things you should be thinking about first that clearly we either aren't thinking about or are in deciding that this is more important. It's simply not. And like the next step in that line of thinking is, well, then you can't take the refugees. I'm sorry. You can't, because if you really want to go down this road, there's a lot more people in the world who have it a lot worse than people in Ukraine and have had it a lot worse for a fuck ton of the time longer than they have, and probably at least partially at our hands. And so what is the point of deciding that this is the way we should go with the money? There isn't one.
You got to pull out. So the way the international law, The way it works is we
signed international law is not a real thing. I can't stand that argument. It is not a fucking real thing. So, it is a thing that people who are playing little brother to the big boys have to pretend to obey so that they don't get run over by a fleet of tanks in the middle of the night. Otherwise, you don't fucking pay attention to it. No one fucking pays attention to it unless they are forced to. It's a fake thing.
So it may or may not be, but the reality is we're abiding by it. So if somebody goes to United States first and then tries to come here, say somebody from, I'm going to just say a country from Somalia goes to United States first and then tries to come to Canada and claim asylum here, we won't be able to accept them because they had, based on the laws and what we signed, the agreements and everything, they would go to United States because that was the first port of entry that they were able to claim asylum. So there are certain laws and just the way things are set up. So the way it is, and we signed with some, I forget what it is, of some UN type agreement. I forget what it was.
Meanwhile, the UK, Rishi Sunak announcing like a week ago that they're sending all immigrants, illegals back, asylum seekers or otherwise. You can't come. That's all there is to it. And if your home country won't take you, we'll send you somewhere else. He's saying that on TV, right? You saw the prepared statement he made. It looks like he made it maybe in, yeah, like these guys, again, not to yell at you, because I know it's not your personal view, but like the people who follow these laws are getting played. And you're seeing it over the place. You're seeing it all over the place, right?
For
it's
sure.
Everywhere.
That's just the way it is. And there's some economic refugees, there's some like legitimate refugees. And it's just sad. I mean, you know, you look at what we have here. We might be able to extend a helping hand to
see
some
this is another thing. I'm gonna get myself in trouble here, but fuck it. Like if you look, you know what I want to know, and this is gonna be harsh, and maybe it's not the most popular thing to say, but I want to know what the state of your life was before Russia attacked Ukraine. Were you a guy there who was unemployed, hanging out in the corner, shooting dice with your boys, whatever, you know, wasting people's time, committing small crimes? Or were you a guy who was like, did you own a bakery? Did you work for a local restaurant? Did you, you know, like what were you doing? If you were a non-contributor before the war, then the war is not enough reason to be able to be allowed over here. Period. End of story. That may sound harsh, but these things are the realities of the situation. When you reach the end of the fiat rope, you can't just keep giving things away for free. You can't just keep not building homes. You can't just keep putting people up in houses for $100 million on a whim because you need to for the election or whatever the reason was. At some point, it ends, and we're there now. And so this idea that like economic refugees and war refugees, fine. Tell me what you were doing before the first shell landed. What were you doing? If you weren't doing anything, then you can't come. Period.
Economic refugees they are denied. There's no reason for them.
They should come here. It's hard. I'm not saying it's like a good situation, but
no.
There's finite resources, man, everywhere. Not just here, but everywhere.
Correct. And so that's the problem Italy is dealing with. Yeah, I follow the news there quite a bit, and a lot of migrants, because it's the closest location to Africa. So a lot of them land in Sicily because they I guess Libya or whatever it is. So Italy has a huge problem with these migrants that came over, and they don't know what to do with them. They're trying to put them anywhere else besides, well, Italy, because they just don't have the ability to deal with them. So yeah, you're right. The resources are not infinite. You have to deal with them. Just, you know, borders are open to a degree, and if people show up, and the reality is if you go to any country and you claim asylum, as long as they're part of this agreement, they're going to hear your case regardless if it's legitimate or not. If you go to the States and you live, you know, I don't want to say like you particularly, I know your situation, but if you go there and claim asylum, they're going to hear your case. They'll laugh at you through the whole proceeding and kick you out, but they're going to go through the due process to hear it. That's just the reality of it. And you're obviously not a refugee in any which way.
Mention Trip in the chat saying that the limited resources thing is a fallacy. Okay. What I'm saying there is that
no, it's not a fallacy.
It's not. I don't think so either. But you know what you're suggesting, Trip, is that you can put all these people into Saskatchewan. Fine. I agree with you. We should, if we have this immigrant influx, put them somewhere that needs to be developed and have them build up, you know, the kind of quote unquote new Western frontier, right? I know it's not all the way west, but a little west of here. Or wherever else, right? Some place that's sparsely populated that needs to be, you know, that needs a little bit of an economic pump. And maybe you could do that. But the fact of the matter is we're not asking people to do that. Instead, we're just continuing to flood the same, like I said before, a couple of weeks ago, what is it, seven cities, Vancouver, Calgary, Toronto, Hamilton, Niagara, and maybe a couple out east. I don't know exactly what they would be, but
Montreal. Like, I know Quebec does their own immigration.
Yeah, thing, so like, Montreal, so like, this is the stuff, right? And yeah, the thing is, we should be asking again. Like, I don't. There's not a good way to phrase the comment because it's just so.
It's touchy, you know. Yeah, I know. There's no way to come out and let's move on because last thing I'll say that CERB benefits. I know it's been a while since we talked specifically about CERB benefits, but yeah. It's been unearthed that 300,000 teenagers between the ages of 15 and 17 got CERB payments totaling $636 million. So there you go. When they rolled out this thing, they did it in haste because, well, if they're going to close the economy and a lot of people are going to suffer, they either do something like this or they do nothing. And
how much does $500 million in the hands of teenagers contribute to inflation, you think?
I think it's a drop in the bucket. More, it's
I don't,
more
honestly, just a, I don't know.
I don't think that. I mean, Canada's overall debt is over $1 trillion. What's $636 million in the grand scheme of things? It really isn't all that much. But you do this, a few other things that are similar. Well, $636 million turns into $6.3 billion, and then it's a percentage of the overall debt, and you can say, yeah, that's measurable. Yeah. So it's adding all these things together. It's just, you look at this and it's like really sad. And a lot of this is contributing, you know, to what we're dealing with now. Prices are high, and man, oh man, it makes me like foam at the mouth sometimes just to see this shit happen because this was just pushed. It was rushed out, and
it was a lot. Yeah. It was a lot very quickly. God bless those kids. At least they had a new Xbox to play during the pandemic. We should wrap it up. An hour and a half is where we try and cut these things. So
yeah, let's do this. My no corner will be really quick. Spencer Schiff. That's all I gotta say.
That's a good one, actually. I was gonna pick the WorldCoin guys. You should listen to that episode of Bankless. Pleditor, who's in our Discord, beat me to the quality comment there from the founder about how he can't talk about token distribution. I wonder why. God bless everyone. So, we'll see you next week. Another giveaway next week, right?
Let's do it. So we'll give another one of these. And so we'll see you then. And the after show is coming up. If you want to hear it, it's going to be on the audio posted tomorrow after hearing this.
No, Wednesday.
Wednesday. But when they hear this, when they hear this audio, it's going to be tomorrow.
Right. I got to get that right. Okay. God bless. Take care. Cheers.
Take care, PV, and don't be a cock.